shoots, scores! DK wins it for an end round!
What is going on, guys? Welcome back to the Lions Blog Podcast. This is your host, Gavin, and we are here after our 2-0 defeat against Montreal to sum up the game, talk about what went right, what went wrong, what we could have done better, all the fun stuff you guys know and love that we talk about, and maybe do a quick summary of the season. We're going to spend more time on that in a future podcast where we do our season review. That will be coming within the next week or two, depending on availability, as Daniel just breathes really heavily into his mic. So let's introduce the man. Daniel, how are you doing tonight?
Well, if I can buy that, I mean a cigarette. That's the heavy breathing you could hear.
I know for a fact you don't smoke. Hope you're having a good day so far. It's been a long one, I'm sure.
It's all right. It's about to be even longer. It was fine until about 10 minutes ago. Then it just got miserable.
Hopped on with me. And also here to discuss some unfortunate activities that happened on Sunday night is Adam. Adam, how are you doing tonight?
Yeah, we're doing all right. You know, we always record late because I work late. And then I've also been having Wi-Fi issues. But, you know, we persevere through to bring you all the content. And I think that's what really matters.
That is what really matters. It's tier one content. I will hear no otherwise. Okay, so let's get into the match. And really no issues for me with the lineup. It was pretty standard. I think that's our best team that we could possibly put out, bar Janssen due to injury. Any issues with the lineup from you guys? I'll start with Daniel.
No, not really. I mean, what else could he do with what he had available? There wasn't a great deal of options, was there? So, no. The only thing I could have seen is maybe, I don't know. No, he was never going to drop her, so no. Forget it. The team was fine. There's nothing else he could have done.
Yeah. Well, yeah. For me, the one thing I said before the game is I wanted to see Benji instead of Kara, but I knew that wasn't going to happen. So I'm kind of lukewarm on the issue. Adam?
Yeah, I would agree. We all knew that was going to be the lineup. There was no questions about it. But I, too, like how we play with a mobile striker more than Kara.
Right. And we will get into that for sure. So let's kind of talk about the first half. And we kind of started off kind of in a deep block, which is fine. No issues with that on my end. And then we started to create a couple of big chances for ourselves. So, Adam, I want to get your thoughts on the first one, which was Kara running through with a beautiful ball from Mauricio Pereira. And Merchant Kara has two options. He can either shoot or he can pass it over to Juan, who makes a big run at the back post. And he elects to shoot and skies it. Wanted to get your thoughts on the big miss.
If you are going to shoot and you are the striker, you're the DP striker. You're the guy who's supposed to score the goals, right? If you're going to shoot, you have to hit the target. Dems the rules. If you get it on target and get saved, okay. Goalkeepers make saves. Saves happen. You got to give yourself a chance to score. And that was our best chance of the game by far. In a game where we ended up, of course, discount the penalty at the last second of the game. It was. You know, either 0-0 or 1-0 for 92 minutes or whatever it was, right? Mm-hmm. We only needed one goal. In a game where we only needed one goal, and the best chance of the game falls to our DP striker, and he doesn't hit the target. And he has basically one job because he doesn't participate in build-up. He's not terribly great in hold-up. He's not terribly great at pressing. He has one job, which is when the ball comes to him, get it on target. And he failed. He actually has shown the ability, in combining with Torres at times, to actually be pretty decent at squaring a ball across the face of goal, at even putting a cross in. Personally, if I were playing FIFA, and I know that is a horrible way to start the sentence. I swear that ball.
All right, I'll see you later. I'll see you later. Let's come
up. We no, but the point analysis here.
The point is, I square that ball a million times out of a million because it's the better play.
Yeah.
Because Juan had a tap in, like Juan could have scored that goal, and I do not say that lightly. Tap in. If he squares it correctly onto his right foot at the back post, tap in. It's a 100%er. It's not even a 99%er. It's, I guess we have seen guys miss it and everyone points and laughs at them on the internet, but it was that kind of chance if it is squared correctly.
And then Carr's not the one that's getting yelled at. It's Juan.
Exactly, that too. But he elected to take the shot, which I don't really have a huge problem with given his standing within the team. But he needs to hit the target. And he deserves the flack he gets for not hitting the target, in my opinion. Yeah, like, because it's a you had one job kind of thing. So that's my take on that miss.
In the big moments, you need your big players to step up and do what they're supposed to do, do what they're paid for. And unfortunately, our big player didn't. And, you know, there's a million other things that went right and went wrong that could have led to us winning. But at the end of the day, that's a big moment that could have contributed to a better result for us on the day. Daniel, do you have any additional thoughts on the chance that went begging for Cara?
No, I mean, all I'll say for Cara is that as a striker, strikers don't usually think about squaring the ball, but on an equal note, he has to hit the target. Like, you've got to work the goalkeeper. There's no excuse for skying it, you know what I mean? And you've just got to do better in those situations. Totally agree with that, but I also wouldn't have expected him to square it. You know, I think strikers by nature are goal scorers, which, you know, that's his reputation. That's what he came to the club as. You know, they tend to be more selfish, you know. And I wouldn't have expected him to square it. I was expecting him to shoot. So,
for the record, I do agree with you, Daniel. You want your striker to have that mentality. Mm-hmm. And in my very biased opinion, I think Harry Kane's the best striker in the world. He's selfish. He mm-hmm. will absolutely take that shot and he'll convert it because he's that good. But you know, you want the top level strikers to be like, nah, this is me. I'm taking the shot and I'm going to score. But yeah. Then you got to score.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. Yeah. I totally agree. I don't expect him to score it, but absolutely. He's got to work the goalkeeper at the bare minimum.
And it was pretty, I don't know why, but I was shocked to not see it hit the back of the net. I thought that was in. I really did. I know he had his struggles early on this season where he missed a couple one-on-ones. But there, I think there was one that he scored, and I was confident this was going to go in, and he just, man, did he wolf that thing over the net. So really, really disappointing there. And, well, we can't talk about the first half without also talking about the two potential penalty incidents for Montreal. So, Daniel, I'm going to stick with you here first. I don't know how you want to tackle the incidents, if you just want to go one by one or both overall. But what were your feelings on the incidents? Did you think either of them were penalties? And just what were your thoughts on them?
I mean, I think, you know, games like this are a little bit tricky, you know, because, you know, playoff games by, excuse me, by nature, like, they're like cup ties, you know, they're played sometimes at a frenetic tempo. And there's a lot going on, there's a lot of emotion, a lot of distraction. I mean, you can always make an argument for a penalty, just like any penalty is given, there's always going to be a counter argument that it shouldn't have been given. I think that, in the balance, I think the ref probably did make the right choices. You know, I think the ref had a good game, honestly.
I agree.
He did what I want referees to do, which is just let the game go, you know? Like, don't pull player back for every single thing. You know, let the game flow, let it be played at its natural tempo, and you know, unless you see something really drastic or really blatant, then just let it go. You know, I mean, I'm more supportive of referees getting things wrong if they go with the mentality that they're letting things go than I am of referees that just pull player back for absolutely everything and are inconsistent, and it not only frustrates the players, it frustrates the supporters as well. So I think he had a good game. I don't take issue with the decisions. I mean, the one he did call in the second half was a good call. It was a fair call.
Yeah.
And on the balance of play, I mean, he had a decent game. So I don't have an issue with either of the calls, to be frank.
Yeah. With the first call, definitely not a penalty. I think he goes over super easy. The second one, I think on another day that's given on video review. Mm-hmm. I do think the player went down easy, but another ref would have seen the contact on the video monitor and gone, no, yeah, there's contact there. Yes, he goes down, but contact, penalty. So I think we're a little lucky on that second one. Adam, well, how do you feel?
On video review, remember the bar to clear is clear and obvious error.
But we know they re-referee.
Yeah.
They do.
They should. Like, they shouldn't. I mean, Elfath literally just won ref of the year, and I do think this game is seeing why. I thought it was a well refereed game, which is not mm-hmm. something we say often.
No.
But I think he did show good restraint on sticking with the call, and like the NFL would say, call stands as called on the field, right? It's not confirmed or reverse. It's just call stands, and I think that was the correct implementation of the rules there. Basically, it did not clear the bar of clear and obvious error to overturn, so no pen.
Yeah, just figured we had to give that some airtime because those are two big moments in the match that could have really swung the game away from us.
Definitely. I mean, you have to remember as well with VAR is that you can really manipulate the game however you want with VAR. Like, even something that, you know, is the right call can be, you can look at it and change the angles. You can convince yourselves almost that it should have been given the opposite direction. So mm-hmm. I think we should just be thankful that, like I said, the ref let the game go and we got, you know, a result based mostly off of the balance of play, you know, rather than sitting here thinking, well, you know, they missed two blinders of calls, you know, and we feel like we're unjustified, you know what I mean? So yep. I think it's a good turnout. I wish the refereeing would have been of a higher standard for the whole season.
Yep. So, yeah. You can only wish. All right, let's go ahead and talk about the Carlos chance next. I mean, is there anything to add other than it was just good play and a bad shot? Daniel, I'll start with you. Looks like Adam has left the call. So, Daniel, I will definitely be going to you.
No, go, Adam. We'll wait.
Adam, come on. No.
That's funny. No, but,
no, go ahead. You can come back.
Yeah, sounds good. I think what you got to remember, like with most chances like this, is that when we watch them on screen, we always feel like, oh yeah, he's had like a good 5-10 seconds or something to play this out and think about it. When you're playing, you only have a split second at times to react, and you've got the distractions of other people around you and whatever else. And I don't think the chance looked particularly easy. I think he had to make a decision in a second. Remembering he's a centre back, he's not a striker. If he, if he was able to put those chances away, he wouldn't be a defender. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I don't think it was as easy a chance. I mean, you always expect them to hit the target, but I think, being devil's advocate, I think he probably just didn't have much time to think about it.
Yeah, I'm just watching it back here, and he chests it down so well.
Mm-hmm.
And he just slides across the ball. He's definitely onside.
Yeah.
And it just, I don't know if it hits off the top of his ankle or what, but here's a good angle of it.
Well, that's the thing, like, with
players, he just slices through it, yeah.
It's like, you know, with good players is that they can, in their own way, they kind of slow time down. Like, and this is the good players with the best technique. They can kind of slow the game down for themselves and take that time to do that. It's not mm-hmm. something he's going to do on a frequent basis because it's just not what he does. It's, muscle memory plays a part, and technique, and experience, you know, though all those are different factors. I mean, he does tick it down really well, but, you know, again, he still has a split second to think about it, and it's not his normal thing, so we can't expect much. I always think, like, chances on goal from centre-backs are they're a bonus, you know?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Adam, I know you've jumped back into the call here, but we're talking about the Carlos chance. Any thoughts on that?
No, I think I heard most of it. Y'all got it pretty well summed up.
All right. Yeah, definitely the Cara chance is the bigger one for me. Mm-hmm. Like, that one might even be a higher, like, expected goal since he's closer in, and I think he's got a free shot on goal there, but, like, Cara's is the bigger chance for me personally, based on who's taking the shot, and just it's not a volley. He's shaping up to take a shot. He should be taken in practice a million times. Let's go ahead and get into the second half. Yet again, we have a poor
I will say one thing. Mauricio Pereira had an incredible first half. He created all, and I don't think we talked about it. It was a low percentage chance, but the Angulo shot too that also sailed over the bar. But he created all three of those.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
those were our only three shots of the half.
Yeah, and Mauricio Pereira created three scoring chances. I mean, one excellent, one medium to good, and one, you know, we'll call it a half chance. Mauricio played well enough to win. After the ESPN article saying that he was, like, thinking about going back to Argentina, his last season with the club, questioned, like, oh, is this focus on? Mauricio was our best player in the first half. It's just funny how those things work. And I think credit in an episode like this where we're going to criticize the team a lot for getting their asses kicked in a playoff game, albeit by a very good team on the road. We should note Montreal is an incredible team, had a great season, very talented, top to bottom. Mauricio played well enough to win. And that's what you want from the captain in these kinds of games.
Yeah. That's a good point. And I second your sentiment that this is a good team. I'm really not, like, super angry about losing this match, because I agree Montreal they're just a good team. I mean, I felt like I was overhyping them in the episode I did with Chase, because I was, like, just kind of listing out all their players, and I was listing out their system and their ability to do multiple different things within the match, and I was like, I just really think this is a really good team. Am I overhyping them, though? And I think we just came up against a good opponent. We matched them for most of the game, and just we didn't take our big chances, and they did. And it's really as simple as that. So I think we played decently well for about that first half, and then it's the second half where it really kind of fell apart for us, which is nothing new. So we do have yet another poor second half, I should say. Only two shots in the entire half. The last one coming in the 50. Oh, I have it up here. I think it's the 53rd minute by Facundo Torres. Oh, no, 73rd minute by Moutinho. So Torres took a shot in the 51st, Moutinho in the 73rd, both from outside the box. And those were our only shots of the half. So, Daniel, what do you think changed, if anything, in the second half? What were we struggling with that caused us to really be unable to create anything?
I think a lack of options off the bench is a big factor. You know, as Adam, as referenced with Mauricio, he had a really good game, but you can only expect one player to do so much. And, you know, Montreal clearly did something in the second half. I think Montreal smartened up. They kept the ball really well. Like, I have to say, Montreal, like, when I always talk about playing in transition, and Montreal, you know, were a very good sort of case study of just what I'm referring to, like when it's keeping the ball at the back and playing it into midfield and making little runs off the ball. Orlando couldn't do that. They can't do it very well. They don't have the personnel to do it. And I think they just ran out of ideas and substitutes. I mean, around that 60-minute mark, I mean, you've had your game less than a week before. You've had your flight up to Canada. You're dealing with maybe a little climate change there and all of that type of stuff. And then you know, 60 minutes in, you need fresh legs and you need somebody out wide, maybe to come in, stretch the play a bit more. And I'm talking like an actual out-and-out winger, not a converted winger, like somebody, you know, who can play those positions and just be and improve what you have. Orlando doesn't have that coming off the bench. We were just talking a little bit earlier about the subs, and I mean, the bench is dry, you know? So it's, I think Montreal just had so much good quality when they had the ball. It was making Orlando chase a lot more, and they had no subs. They had no changes they could really make. I think that's where the performance dropped off, to be honest.
Yeah, now I will say Montreal did only make two subs, one in the 80, one in the 90th minute. But I think I think you do have a point on our end of the subs. I mean, we didn't really bring in any quality, and we brought in what we could.
That's what I'm saying. Right? Like, he has what he has. It's like he can't change that. It's not like he can pluck a bunch of players out of nowhere. We
go get Haaland for the day.
I mean, I keep thinking in my mind, like, when I'm saying that, when I was just referring back to that comment where I was just making, I kept thinking of people like Van der Water and those types of guys that would have been...
Like Pato?
Pato, yeah. Those types of guys that,
They had him on the team, he just got hurt.
No, I know, and that's what I'm saying. Like, it's not really their fault, you know. The only criticism you can level, which will go probably into our end of season podcast, I would imagine, but just to touch on it briefly, is that, you know, Pato went down injured. Van der Water was sold. You know, they didn't really replace those guys enough, you know. I mean, they had Gonzalez injured as well, so Angulo came in, but you would argue that, you know, they could have brought in a couple more attackers, you know?
I mean, they did. They brought in Jake Mourinho and Nico Giacchini, who...
Don't play.
Don't play for a reason, we'll say that. Well, play for a reason.
That's what I'm saying, like... I've always been an advocate, and I've said this many times. I'm going to say it one more time, so, you know. But when you're bringing players in, you've got to bring in better than what you've got. And those guys are not better than what was already there. Those are like, you know, bums to put on the bench, you know. And when I say bums, I mean, like, you know, to sit down. I'm not calling them bums.
British, guys. He's British. Cut him some slack.
I forget my Britishness sometimes will come through, but... It's basically people to sit on the bench, you know, like people to make numbers up. And the focus maybe should have been on, okay, well, instead of, you know, paying 370 grand a year for Giacchini, why don't we, you know, buy somebody that can come in and we know it'll be good for next season as well. So, I don't know, like the recruitment was not quite right, you know.
So I'm going to push back on your point a tiny bit because... And I agree with you somewhat. Well, I agree with you totally in theory. Of course, you always want to bring in, when you're acquiring new talent, you want to improve on what you have. Of course, that's basic team building 101. Like, everyone agrees with that. They tried. They just got some nasty injury luck. You know, you got Pato injured at a critical point of the season when he was just starting to find his groove. You got Gonzalez injured literally in his last game before he was going to leave for us. You know, it's those are two guys that either would have been starting or on the bench, and then we would have had Cara or Angulo on the bench to bring in, which, you know, those are talented guys that, you know, and I thought Benji is a, I think Benji is a good bench piece too. I thought he looked the best of the subs we made and at least trying, you know, to have some dynamic quality to him and try to break down, especially after they scored. They parked the bus full on. It was defend and counter the whole way. So it's and against a quality team like Montreal who is used to playing like that and very used to getting up and then just suffocating teams, it's very tough to break them down. What I'm getting at though is they tried. They just put all their eggs in a few baskets, and then when those baskets turned out to be broken, they kind of scrambled to say, okay, we need to get as many guys on our list in as possible and see if a couple of them worked out. Angulo, that was a good find.
I agree.
Giacchini, Mulroney, you know, that's why they brought in three wingers and only one worked out, because they weren't sure if any of the three of them were going to work out. So there are different schools of thought to team building, but particularly in the middle of a season when you don't know how guys are going to mesh, I don't know that I fault Muzy and Enrico for trying the quantity over quality approach, because you only need – they were looking for a starter on the wing. They technically thought they only needed one guy. I don't know how accurate that was, but – you know, they got Angulo. I can't fault them for not trying to buy a guy for $5 million and then integrate him in the middle of the season and hope and pray that he's worth that $5 million, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think the off season is generally the time to spend big, unless it's just like an obvious slam dunk deal that's like, you're stupid if you don't do this kind of thing when they pop up. Like acquiring Mauricio Pereira was on a free transfer. Like, duh. Fucking duh, you do that. But otherwise, I don't hate too much them trying dart throws. It just didn't work out due to injuries and just Giacchini and Mulroney not having the stuff.
Mm-hmm. That's fair enough. Yeah, I tend to think you make a good, valid point. I mean, the only thing I will say is that, you know, like, Toronto did some decent business. I know that they didn't, you know, qualify for playoffs or what, but they've gotten the new players in and they've gotten, you know, they're going to get used to the area, to the team and to the league. Next year they'll fire, you know, they'll probably do quite well as long as they can sort the defence out. And that it still would have been a decent time. I mean, the summer is the best time if you're recruiting from Europe.
The thing about Toronto is, though, Toronto is by far the richest team in the league.
Yeah.
And it's not close. I don't want to hear City Football Group. I don't want to hear Red Bull. I don't want to hear either of the LA teams. Toronto FC is backed by the two largest communication companies in Canada. Literally, the sporting group that owns TFC has billionaire partners. In the ownership groups of Bell Communications and what's the other big one in Canada? There are two giant ones in Canada.
TSN?
Rogers? Is it Rogers?
Rogers. It Bell and Rogers. Yes. Yeah. Literally those two companies, the owners of those two companies.
Sounds like a dry cleaning company.
Own TFC.
Rogers, doesn't it?
That is like hundreds of billions of dollars of backing. They can buy Insigne and not give a shit. If Insigne flopped, they could buy 10 more of him.
It's true.
If the rules would allow it.
If the rules would allow it, TFC would win every year.
Mm-hmm.
TFC would be PSG.
And that's kind of what I wanted to add to the conversation, the good conversation you both had, that there are roster rules as well. You know, and this isn't necessarily in disagreement to what you said, Daniel, because I agree. Always go for the player that's the better player, like you said, like Adam agreed with as well. But unfortunately, we are in a league that has a cap, that has salary restrictions, and we don't know how much money we had to play with, how much cap space we had to play with, how much GAM we could buy down the cap with, and all the convoluted monopoly money rules that we don't have to deal with it, but Rico and Luis Muzy have to deal with it. So I think with what you're saying, it's true, and it's unfortunate that Giacchini and Jake Mulroney didn't hit, and maybe we could have, you know, was there a one better option plus a loan for Angulo instead of the three? But also, maybe you hope that one of Giacchini and Jake Mulroney hit along with Angulo, who you were confident was going to be a good, solid option, and it just didn't work out. So that's who, going back to the game, Jake Mulroney ends up coming on for Urso and, oh goodness, what was the other one? I literally wrote it down. Benji Michel comes in for Angulo, actually. And we go to a pretty straight two up top system that just did absolutely nothing for us. So it was a roll of the dice. It was two strikers against three center backs, and we lost total control of the midfield, and just we did nothing for the rest of the game, really. So Adam, what were your thoughts on that system change that just clearly didn't work?
That's what happens when you're out of options. You just start throwing darts. See if you can get a bullseye. Spoiler alert. We didn't get a bullseye.
We bricked it.
Yeah. No, I mean, I don't have a huge problem with the subs given the lack of options. I mean, after Benji, who's the obvious one to come in, you're looking at Tesho, you're looking at Jake Moraney, you're looking at Nico Giacchini. You know, it's slim pickings. So you need to make a sub. The team looked flat coming out of halftime. You need to make a sub, change something up, see if it works. There was nothing really to do. I don't think it. Maybe what I would have done is take Kara off for Benji pretty early, because I think he had a bad half. Maybe around 55, 60, I would have taken Kara off for Benji and then gone super free-flowing, you know, super fast ball movement, get the wingers involved and inverted as often as you can, you know, try something like that and just try and create some chaos with movement is maybe what I would have done instead of kind of trying to go long ball pretty quick, which is what they did. So, you know, I would have tried a different dart throw, but, you know, they picked one and it didn't work.
Yeah.
Daniel, I agree with what Adams said. I mean, my dart throw, honestly, would be to stick to the system that you know works. Just modify the personnel, even though there's not many to pick from. You know, I think that's the whole reason you have an identity, like a style of play. You can stick to it and just tweak it here and there rather than go, you know, full on sort of 4-4-2-ish and just, you know, take a punt and lose the midfield. Like you said, that would have been what I would have changed. I would have just kept the same shape, but just changed the people in there. That's it.
And that is an interesting thing to think about. Like, yeah, we weren't good in the second half, really, mm-hmm. but we did make a couple of decent, well, more than decent, some big chances in that first half with this system. And yes, they were going to sit deep, but could we have moved Pereira up and maybe brought in Cartagena and kept Pereira more in the mm-hmm. offensive third, you know? And then you have Araujo and Cartagena in the back, you know, kind of shutting everything down, any counterattacks down sort of thing, and getting the ball to Pereira and have him further up the pitch, trying to create in those tight spaces. And then Benji, you know, with the movement, like, could we have kept the same system and moved the personnel around a bit? I think that's a good idea. Maybe not. It's another option. And I think it might have been a good option to see for 10, 15 minutes before we went to the dart throw. But instead, it took till the 77th minute, and I wanted to ask you about the timing of the subs. This is always a thing with coaches, I feel like. They didn't do the subs at the right time. 77 minutes is pretty late into the game to be making your first two subs, though, especially 1-0 down. He waited it out 9 minutes before making that first change.
Yeah, the timing's far too late. It takes about 4 or 5 minutes just for a player to get used to the flow of the game. So, you know, all of a sudden you're looking at a, you know, swing there, like a 77th minute sub. You might not really see that player getting on the ball that much until the 82nd minute. So, I don't know. Like, I like the changes from when I watch football. I think, like, before the half, you kind of have an idea of what you want to change. And then you give your players till maybe 55 minutes to, you know, you tell them what you want to see, you give them till 55 minutes to implement it, and if they haven't done it, then that's when you start changing it. Because you've got to give the guys, you've got to put your people in an environment to win as well. You can't expect them to.
Especially with five subs.
Especially
now,
with
we
five
didn't
subs.
Have a lot of quality, but
Yeah, but
we had a couple pieces we could have brought
on. But like, what's the point in like what we've seen this season quite a lot of is what's the point in giving like, you know, your strikers, your backup strikers, you know, 3 or 4 minutes, your backup fullbacks 3 or 4 minutes. I don't understand that because that, I mean, it's not like we've held on to leads this season and won games. It hasn't worked, you know what I mean? So you've got to think of it, well, maybe the changes have to come soon, and maybe you just give players, put them in an environment where they can actually affect the game rather than just giving them minutes for what seems to be just the sake of doing so. I don't get it. I think 55, 60 minutes, you change it. That should be what you do.
Yeah. Adam, any thoughts on Montreal's goal?
Antonio Carlos got caught ball watching.
That's my main takeaway, too.
Really badly. It was like he was just fucking standing there like a statue watching the ball, and Smilkone ran right behind him, and it was over from there. No, they had, to Montreal's credit, great ball movement. I wish we played more like that. I thought it was a really pretty team goal. You know, several quality players touched the ball in quick succession. That's usually a recipe for success, and it was, because that's how you create ball-watching center backs, is when you move the ball a bunch, they're like, oh, where do I need to be? They lose track of the guy that's running behind them. Easy goal. So it was really well worked, and credit to Montreal, because it's not – I feel like we always look at it from what did Orlando City do, and yes, Carlos made a mistake, right? That play sets up that mistake to be made, and it's repeatable. That mistake will be made if you play like that by any team, you know, short of the elite center backs who still occasionally make that mistake. So Yeah, it was a mistake. It was a bad mistake. He gave up a goal. It was his fault, but it was also Montreal's doing, and I respect and applaud them for a really good goal.
Yeah, it was a gorgeous goal. I agree wholeheartedly with every single thing you said, because I do agree that a lot of times we just say, oh, it was this person's fault, this person's fault on our team. Like, if they didn't do that, they wouldn't have scored. And it's like, technically, yes, but the other team did a really good job in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And Montreal had beautiful play. There was a flick in there, and flicks are always, you know, throw people off their rhythm, because that it basically took somebody out of the game, and then Carlos is ball watching. Carlos is looking, okay, so this player is running towards us, and I need to be ready if he gets past another guy. And then he doesn't see Kone running in behind. Kone slots it home, 1-0. And I thought Kone as well had a fantastic game for them. He is some player. He's had such a good season. Thoroughly enjoyed him, watching him this season. Anything else to add, Daniel, on the goal?
No, just like you said, at the end of the day, it's like picking a lock. You know, you can have a really good lock, but if the other team, you know, or if whoever's trying to pick a lock is an expert, they're eventually going to get you. And that's what football teams try and do. They work on these things, you know, for weeks at a time. They look at the weaknesses of players, and they try to exploit them. Montreal, to be fair, just seem to know how to do it. And the way they keep the ball and the player, they have the patience of a saint when it comes to attacking. And you know, it's they're a good side. They finished, you know, they didn't finish top of the conference, right? They finished second. But yeah, you don't, over a 34 game season, I mean, you finish second in the conference, you're obviously a good team to do that. So
I think they finished a point behind Philly.
That's right. I couldn't remember the last. I know on the last day they had a chance of getting it. I just couldn't.
Yeah,
remember.
They did.
But yeah, no. You've just got to hold it up sometime and say, look, the other team just played well. That's it. And it gives you a blueprint as to, you know, maybe what you can do next year, you know?
Yeah. Last thing to kind of touch on before we get into some questions is João Moutinho giving away the penalty. It was the 95th minute. It was very, very, very early on in the 95th minute. For me, it's just a frustration penalty.
Yeah.
He's just mad that we can't get the ball back. He just dives in, pushes him over, and ends up being in the box. Penalty, game over. Any other thoughts on it, Chase or Daniel or Adam?
Yeah, that was a really bad call by the refs. I think we really got pro'd in that instance, and they should be ashamed of themselves. First of all, how dare you call a penalty on Orlando City? It's poor form by the refs, but...
Yeah, ridiculous.
For those who don't understand sarcasm, that was a joke.
I was just... I was just about to burn down some buildings. Do you tell me I need to put this gasoline away now and you didn't mean it? Because I'm about to get arrested here.
I know I'm very charismatic and influential, but I'm going to need you to put down the matches, Daniel.
Shit. Okay. I'll be back in a minute. If you hear any police sirens and any radios, just panic. All right.
You're the one who would need to panic in that scenario. All right, let's get into some questions here. We end up losing the game 2-0. At Tommy CTID says, how far away is this team from being able to balance four competitions, bearing in mind they struggled with two? So maybe some context on this one, Adam, is last episode, Daniel and I spoke this past Friday, and we looked at the Open Cup results and the games surrounding the Open Cup games. And we went 3 wins, 1 draw, and 8 losses in the 2 games surrounding each Open Cup game. That's so
not great, Bob.
No, yeah, not great, Bob, at all. So, Adam, how far away is this team from being able to balance four competitions, bearing in mind we heavily struggled with really just the Open Cup?
Oh, extremely far. And we can measure this in the number of players that we need. So let's count them. Urso and Mauro are both gone. Maybe Galese is too. We don't know. I know people are, by the time this airs, downloads, whatever, that Instagram thingy the way on Rodrigo's Instagram, Pedro commented, don't read too much into that, but there is still a chance that he's gone, but that wouldn't be why. We don't know anything yet. Don't freak out. They're just counting players here. So 1, 2, 3 starters. You like to improve on another starter anyway, so call it 4 somewhere. And then to balance 4 competitions, being CCL, Leagues Cup, Open Cup, MLS, you're going to need some good rotation. You know, you got Tesho. Tesho can do a job. Got Manji, who also might be gone. You know, who knows? But yeah, after that, you're going to need probably 4 or 5 more guys that can do a job. They'll come in. So that's I'm up to about 10 players that we need. We got Cartagena, so 9, right? 9 players-ish that I would like to see that can come in and contribute meaningful minutes before I would say we're ready to balance 4 competitions without, like, punting anything, really. Because we're gonna need to employ heavy rotation. I expect us to start the season horribly in MLS, depending on how far we go in CCL. I don't expect us to go that far in Leagues Cup, and I kind of expect us to go a little try hard in the Open Cup. Be like, let's go back to back in the Open Cup is kind of how I see that happening. Which I don't have a huge problem with, but we need probably a lot of players to. Matt Doyle, I think, said it best. Well-coached team falls short. Needs. Massive talent infusion in the offseason.
Mm-hmm.
Massive talent infusion. And I hope to God we don't lose Faku or Caesar, because, ugh, that would be bad. See, this is why I don't like...
see another... We would need 11.
Yeah, and you know, that's a hell of a 2 to add on there.
Mm-hmm.
I get that Caesar made Mendes, quote-unquote, expendable, and he was a little expensive. Sebas Mendes would be a really good player to have next season.
Yeah, we said that earlier this week.
Yeah.
We said the same thing. Like, we couldn't understand why he'd been let go so cheaply, you know? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense to me at this point why, like, especially, like, knowing coming up that, like, hey, if we're in CCL, we're going to be in 4 competitions. Mendes would be, you know, you need good midfielders. If anything else, you need good midfielders, and he's a good midfielder. You have a quality midfielder who knows the system, who knows the teammates, everyone likes him. He's good in multiple roles. You're about to have your depth tested in a way that this club has never had its depth tested before. Sure, just get rid of him. We don't need him.
Yeah. Now we cannot go into next season without a backup left back. Even if Moutinho leaves, we need two left backs. Like,
don't tempt them with a good time.
Seriously, it's like their favorite thing to do.
Apparently, they listen to all these podcasts. They're going to do this now just to mess with us.
Yeah, they're going to sign. Yeah. Okay, Moutinho's going to leave. They're going to sign one U22 player at left back, and that'll be it.
They'll sign three right backs. That's what they'll do.
All of Kyle them. Smith starting left back.
We'll have a draft pick at right back. We will have a mediocre foreign signing at right back, and we'll still have Juan. And yeah. Kyle Smith will be our backup left back again.
Hmm. That's funny.
Oh man, that would be horrendous. Yeah, I think 10 players sounds about right. That's what we need. I don't think that's what we'll get. And I think some people will resign that maybe we aren't expecting to resign. I think there'll be one player who resigns. It's like, oh really? And maybe those players are different for me than they are for you people, you listeners, and you people, my co-hosts.
Peasants.
No. Yeah, seriously. No, I don't think we re-sign Pedro. I don't think we re-sign Pereira, and I don't think we re-sign Urso. And I don't think we re-sign Benji either. And one of those four, I think, will re-sign. I just do not know which one. But I don't think we go all four, don't resign. And I think the likeliest is Benji,
yeah.
Yeah.
Feels right to me. I think Urso and Mauricio are both gone. It doesn't make sense to me that either one of them would stay. They're getting up there in age. They're at that age where like they're good enough players that they would be welcome back to like their boyhood clubs. So it's getting to be that time.
And then, I don't think we're re-signing Moutinho either. I don't know if I said that or not. But I don't think we're re-signing Moutinho. But I do think somebody stays. Not sure who. But yeah. Daniel, anything to add on kind of what Adam and I have been saying?
No, I tend to agree. You're going to need to be getting 9 or 10 players. And I would just stress that the spine of the team needs to be severely reinforced. I think that's got to be the priority. You know, I think they can find some decent players just even around MLS to pad out squad slots like 18 to 22. You can find some decent players there in MLS, but slots 1 through 18, you've got to be looking at serious like first team quality ready to go. You know, and that's going to be a challenge. And like I said earlier, the summer window was a good opportunity to get a couple of players in. Even if you're just bedding them in for next season, it was still good because there's just more on the market at that time. January is not a great market at all for signings. The only way that Orlando might have any muscle in the winter transfer window is if they sell Facundo and then they have some money to play with.
Well, not necessarily, because if Mauricio is gone, that opens up a DP slot, and we do know the Wolves are willing to spend their own money. It's not necessarily that they're broke like Flavio kind of was. We don't need to sell Facundo to spend big on one more DP.
No, not on one more, but what I mean is it's going to loosen the purse strings a little more, and otherwise, you might end up be waiting until next summer for somebody to come in, which by then you could be out of 3 of the 4 competitions you're playing in. So,
like what happened to Toronto.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, you know, that balancing act, it's a little tricky to hit just with the season being, you know, a different calendar to a lot of these other leagues where you're shopping. But I don't know, we'll see. They've got to strengthen those spine positions. You've got to get the goalkeeper resolved. Another centre back who's arguably better than the two that are already starting. A number 6, a number 10, and definitely another striker. You get those, and then I think you can pad out the rest of the positions just within the league. Maybe even get lucky in the draft and get a good player there. I don't know much about college level soccer, so I don't really know who they could be looking at. But you know, they've hit well on the draft, you know, in the past. So that could be a good avenue as well.
Yeah.
I wonder if Jack Lynn gets a serious look over this offseason, because we're looking at a rebuild basically here.
Mm-hmm.
He lit up MLS Next Pro, which is basically below USL, and then he got loaned out to USL One or USL Seaside. Do we know which
Gavin,
one?
Gavin, do you know that?
Sorry, Jack Lynn? Did he yes. do what?
Which USL did he get loaned out to?
A USL side, I believe.
Yeah, but USL C or USL 1?
I think C.
Oh, that's good. So he's basically one step below MLS right now. And he's getting his chance to prove himself there. I'm not sure how he's doing, but he did light it up when he was with OCB. I wonder if he's going to get that, because, like it or not, Carr is not going anywhere. You know, nothing we say or do will change that. He's not going anywhere. He's on a big contract. He's DP, blah, 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 whatever. We're getting one DP. Mauricio's gone. We're getting one DP. Hopefully it is a playmaking 10 that with, you know, some goal scoring threat. And I hope we spend big on that. I hope we spend at least $5 million on a DP 10.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we're spending big on another striker, but I think Lynn will get a chance to establish himself in the first team.
Yeah, we do help him preseason. He'll get some games, and I can look at it quickly then, can't I?
He went to San Antonio FC and USLC.
Yeah,
he's made two appearances for them.
Well, you know, that's not great.
Well, he went so late on in the season.
Yeah, they probably only had like 3 games left or something.
I don't even know if there's any games left. San Antonio FC. Oh yeah, they just finished their season. They finished first in the Western Conference.
Hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah, so he went to one of the better USL sides.
So I wonder if he still needs to go through the playoffs. So they have playoffs. Yeah, Jack Lynn is definitely an interesting one. I don't know if we're going to use him as like trade bait, if we're going to use him as, you know, I don't even know, like a replacement for backup striker. Like, do we trade Tesho and keep him? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know where I read this, and it could just be, you know, bollocks, but I'd seen something about the new MLS team coming in. Is it St. Louis? We're looking at him, and I guess there's maybe some kind of plan with Orlando that they would trade for him.
Have y'all? I know, Gavin, you probably have because I'm lost now. Have y'all been looking at all at what is totally off topic, but just related to what Daniel said? Have y'all seen what St. Louis has been saying? And the ridiculousness of how they're going about building their roster.
I haven't seen it. What have they said?
They're spending $1.3 million on a goalkeeper.
Oof.
It's Roman Berkey, the ex-Dortmund keeper.
He's a good goalkeeper, though. He is a very good
goalkeeper.
Oh,
he is a good goalkeeper.
You just don't spend that much money on
it. Doesn't Andre Blake make like $700,000?
Yeah, something like that.
Widely regarded as the best keeper in MLS. Andre Blake makes about half of that.
Galais is on 500.
Yeah. The top years. Level keepers don't go above much above 500, 600, 700. They're spending $1.3 million on a keeper.
Yeah.
And then they're saying, we don't even know if we're going to use all our DP slots. We don't need DPs. This is a designated team.
I saw the designated team comment.
They're going to get their shit wrecked.
Yeah, now, I will say, it's
Montreal, they have one, don't they?
They have, they have Wanyama.
No, St. Louis.
No, they, who?
I was saying St. Louis is going to get their shit wrecked.
No, yeah. But Daniel made a comment about Montreal only having one DP. They might only have one DP since they got Mihailovic on the the cheat.
Oh yeah.
But
is Kyoto DP?
Oh, you know what? He might be. But Jack Lynn actually, he was an unnamed, or sorry, he was an unused substitute for St. Louis FC in 2018.
Mm-hmm. So they already know him, you know.
So they already know him. So that's maybe where that connection came from, Daniel.
I'm thinking so. And then, yeah, look, he's from St. Louis as well.
Yep.
So he has his connection there.
If they want to give us some GAM whatever for Jack Lynn, that's good business.
Maybe they'll give us that really good goalkeeper they got. I don't know.
a name to look out for, and I think is a very doable trade, is actually, and we talked about him last offseason, Alec Kahn. Mm-hmm. He went over to Cincinnati, and within 8 weeks, 10 weeks, lost the starting spot to Celentano, who is the draft goalkeeper. And Alec Kahn's still a good goalkeeper. I think he's 28, 29. American. Will not be as expensive as Kalese. Won't be as good as Kalese. But if we lose Kalese, I think he would be a solid option around the league. And there were many clubs going into Atlanta, or not going to Atlanta since he was a free agent, but contacted him last year. And I'm sure there's a lot of clubs that are kind of sniffing around that area again. We should be all over that.
Oh, I'm sure. So now that we're kind of doing a little team building theory here, you need spots. And Daniel mentioned something interesting to me, in that you want 1 through 18 in your squad to be first team level. Like, I feel comfortable starting this player in a league match, right?
Right. That's right.
And I feel like we haven't done that at really any point. I think they've been like 1 through 13, 1 through 14 have been like that. And we really do need to be, there needs to be six or seven guys where that can come in and be like, hey, I'm good too. And and that's when you create real competition in your squad, and the cream rises to the top.
That's what you want. You know, even
The MLS salary restrictions, you need to go cheap in some places. So where can we go cheap, right? One area we can go cheap is goalkeeper, and it can work out. So like Alec Kahn is a good option. We also have a guy on OCB, Javi Otero, who could be a good backup option should we choose to, you know, should we move on from Gless and need a third keeper. You know, Stadahar would obviously be compete for the starting job with say Alec Kahn, right? But we're going to need a third keeper. Javi Otero costs next to nothing, but he's been really good for OCB, and we could just loan him right back, so he still stays fresh with them. Just ways you can go cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is really where Oscar Pareja comes in, and him being, you know, regarded as this academy god and guy that's going to develop young players. We need to start seeing some dividends from that. This is now going to be the fourth year of Oscar Pareja, right? We need to start seeing some guys come in and, you know, be homegrowns and take some spots and do legitimate jobs for this club while being cheap and allowing us to spend money on other areas.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I mean, with the younger players, you've got to get them involved at some point, you know, even getting them on the bench and in a match day situation just gets them, you know, kind of prepared a bit better mentally for when they do need to play. And the young goalkeeper, Otero, it would be on a reserve contract, right? Or it wouldn't even count on the cap. So
he would count, but I believe it'd be very low cap hit.
I think reserve contracts, they don't count. Don't you go up to 10? I think you get 10 reserve contracts.
Maybe.
In your roster of 30 that don't count.
Oh, yeah, you're right. And then, well, he would, I expect him to get a homegrown deal over the offseason.
Yeah.
So we'll see. And in any event, he would not be a player restricting us from signing another player.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I like that.
So I'm going to just jump in here real quick, because as you guys were talking, I Saw a tweet from Mike Gramajo with an article that he talked to Muzzy about some off-season stuff. And he's got a couple quotes here about Pedro Galese, who he says, we absolutely want to have Pedro here in 23 and beyond. We've been talking for a while. It's not only Pedro, it's a few other guys as well. But all I can say right now is that we're really happy with Pedro, and we hope that he's here in 23 and beyond. So they are looking to re-sign him. And then the only other player that there's a comment on is Benji Michel. And Muzzy confirmed that they're in the early stages of negotiating a new contract. Nothing about Moutinho, nothing about Urso. So those ones are still up in the air. Not saying they can't happen, but yeah. So I wanted to add that. But yeah, it's a huge offseason. It feels like every season's a huge offseason, but with the four competitions coming up, it's massive. So really, shout out to Tommy CTID for popping up that question there. And then the last question we've got here is at Mr. Danger Russ, who asks, are fullbacks underrated in MLS? And Daniel, I'll go to you with that one.
Yeah, they're very underrated. I mean, you need good fullbacks. Otherwise, it doesn't matter how good a team you are with your centre-backs and stuff. You know, if your fullbacks need to be able to do a lot of different things, they need to be good, what I'd call 7 out of 10 players, you know, in order for a team to function well. And I'd say that they're underrated. I mean, what do you think?
A lot of the best teams in the league have strong fullback pairings.
Mm-hmm.
Philadelphia are obviously, you know, right up there with LAFC. They tied them on points, but missed out on the Supporters Shield on the tiebreaker of wins. They would have won if the tiebreaker was goal difference. So take of that what you will. Montreal, I think, have good wingback pairs. They're not necessarily fullbacks, but wingbacks. They got second. NYCFC have good fullbacks. So they're third. Then on the Seattle Western side.
Seattle won CCL.
Yep. Seattle won CCL. Fullbacks. They've got fantastic fullbacks. LAFC. Austin, I'd say their fullbacks are okay. But I do think that a sign of a good team is if you have good fullbacks. That's kind of my take on that one. And I do think they're underrated because I think they're a spot within the roster where you can find value for pretty cheap, a la Kyle Smith. And so people just say, okay, we've got a decent fullback who can do a job out here, and we're going to go sink our money into our central defensive midfielder. We're going to go sink our money into our attacking midfielders and strikers and wingers and all the fun stuff. And oh, shoot, we need a guy. Kyle Smith, go be right back. No hard feelings. Kyle Smith, love the guy. But we could have a better right back, backup right back, and starting right back. That sort of thing. So that's my take on that.
Well, yeah. The key to the fullbacks, I mean, is to get players that can play. And you should, again, every player you bring in, you know, maybe with the exception of the centre backs, you know, and a specialised like number six, but the rest of your players should be able to play multiple roles anyway. I mean, if you can find a winger who can play fullback, or fullback can play winger, etc., then, you know, those are the percentage you should go for. Again, it's an easy, I wouldn't say it's an easy position to find, but those are becoming more commonplace now. There's a lot of decent wingers who've all turned into defenders now. So it's just, what's that?
Yeah, I would agree with that. And it almost feels like if your fullback has a weak spot, you're missing out. If you have like Kyle Smith, who would call a defensive fullback, right? Who, yeah. you know, pretty solid one-on-one defense, can play center back. You know, you're not going to get by him that much. But going forward, he doesn't offer that much, you know, versus Juan, maybe not as solid defensively, going forward really fast, but, you know, then has gaps in the crossing game, you know. Moutinho, great crossing, not necessarily as athletic, decent defender. Easily the best fullback we have. You know, it feels like if you're not competing at the level of, you know, those teams with fantastic fullback pairings that are good going forward and defensively, then that's just an area where you're just giving up an advantage to another team.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Certainly. And you can find good fullbacks. I mean,
and especially with how many good wingers there are in MLS, it's harder to find a 10 than a winger. A lot of teams put money into their wingers nowadays. Mm-hmm. With how many good wingers there are in MLS, how many times did we see Nani just abuse the opposing team's left or right back and just dominate a game because of it? Right? You need to have good fullbacks, especially in MLS, where the play is pretty wide. I would say by and large, a lot of teams play pretty wide. Carlos Vela, the undisputed best player in the MLS, and MLS for like 2 or 3 years, mainly played winger, played all over the pitch, but, you know, officially a winger. And you got Nacho Piatti, you had Nani, you had Driussi, who plays on the way. Like, you have all these guys. Zelarayan will drift wide, even though he's a 10, right? All these got Facu Torres, Alan Velasco, Thiago Almada, like all these wingers. You need fullbacks, and you need good fullbacks, and you need fullbacks that will not only defend those guys, but push up ahead and keep them pinned back enough that they're not just, because even if you have Kyle Smith out there, right? Kyle Smith is going to stop, you know, the guy across from him majority of the time. But you don't want that matchup to happen 20 times a game. You want your guy to get to push up far enough that the opposing winger or their attacking fullbacks starting positions far back enough that they're not constantly a threat and badgering your back line. So that's, I would say, you know, thinking about it, you really need those two-way players there more than at, I would say, any other position.
I think so. When you're certainly playing in transition, you would definitely think about that as well. You know, how many times you see a fullback, you know, we'll cut up one side of the field and you'll start occupying like two or three of the opponents. You create those overloads and the third man runs, it opens up the space on the other side. It's crucial to have good fullbacks. I mean, I'm not a great fan of defensive fullbacks. I just, not because I have an issue with defending, but just because I think it restricts your team, like you said. You're kind of just disabling yourself on one side, you know? We'll see.
Yeah, all good stuff, guys. All right, well, I think that just about does it. We will, like I said, have a season wrap-up episode. We'll make sure to get all three of us on, maybe get a special guest on as well for that one. That's a pretty big episode, so maybe we can get someone on there as well. So yeah, Daniel and Adam, really appreciate the conversations we had tonight, and it was a pleasure this season to kind of cover the team with you guys. So just really, really appreciate it. Can't say that enough. So with that, Daniel, for the last time this season, where can our listeners find you at?
Well, if you mean technically right now, I'm sat at my desk in my boxer shorts, about to go to bed.
Good, so man.
That's where they can find me. I'm not really sat in my boxer shorts. But,
and you know. And you should go find him.
You should. I'm quite nice.
Daniel is just delightful, especially when he's in his house in his boxer shorts about to go to bed.
At his desk.
At his desk. Yeah. So, no, in all seriousness, I'm not in my boxer shorts. That's quite a nasty vision. I don't want anybody to have to go to bed with that. But no, I can be found on Twitter, the same usual thing. I changed my handle to Beelzebub4141. So that's where I am.
All right. And Adam, for the last time this season, where can our listeners find you at?
I'm just looking for someone who looks at me the same way that Daniel looks at Marcelo Bielsa. So you can find me searching far and wide, high and low for that.
You'll never find that.
Never will. A love that burns with the passion of 1,000 suns.
1,001.
1,001.
And the 4-1-4-1 is my favorite formation. So, say, kind of wonder.
Of course, is that what Bielsa plays?
Yeah. I actually liked that formation long before Bielsa, but he just made it. He just made it come together. Yeah, so
it's a love story.
Isn't that formation basically just 11 guys just playing positionless soccer? Is like,
much.
You can go here and do literally anything as long as it's good.
Pretty much, the only player that can't do that is the number six. He's the only one that has to basically do as he's told. Everybody else, it's like, come do what you got to do.
Christian Higuita would be amazing as six in that.
Yeah.
As long as you could get a hold of him and get him to not play too wild, but like he's still the best destroyer we've ever had.
He goes on a long list of decent players that have been let go for no apparent reason, you know? So, I'm not sure.
I miss Higuita.
Whoa, he is a free agent, 28 years old.
Yeah, that's not happening.
Should happen.
Anyway, you can find me on the interwebs at Kosher Taco Truck. Yeah.
Well, I am really nervous that Daniel has a secret camera in my room somewhere because I am in my boxers at my desk talking to you guys. And he just painted.
Just tell him, Gavin, I'm sat right next to you.
Oh, okay.
They're heart boxers. I'm also there.
How did you know?
We may or may not have had too many yoga bombs.
Ugh, disgusting.
Gavin, I really appreciate you calling what we do covering the team.
Yeah, that's a good point. Talking about the team, that's probably the better way to explain what we do.
And this is all staying in.
Oh, 100%. But yes, for the last time this season, you can find me at LionsBlog1. Talking about Arsenal and Orlando City and a million other things that I don't even know how to summarize. Just random Twitter BS. So, again, thank you so much to you guys. Thank you to our listeners for sticking with us throughout this entire season. It's been a long one. We've been positive. We've been negative. We've been angry. We've been sad. We've been happy. All sorts of emotions. And just really happy to be able to do it with you guys. So, thank you. And have a good rest of your night, guys.
Have a good one.
Vamos.
Vamos.
Shoots! Scores!